My first job at a real software company was after my sophomore year in college. As you might imagine, I learned a ton that summer. I learned about how companies organize themselves. I learned about how software teams organize around different pieces of the product. I learned specific technical things. I learned how to read code. I learned about navigating large code bases. But the thing that stuck with me most was the specific architectural decision that they had made, to use what is called a work queue. I'm Samuel Taylor. Welcome to my podcast. Today on the show, we're going to talk about work queues as they relate to software and productivity. First, we'll examine what they are and look into a real-world use case. After that, we'll talk about how to know when to use them. Finally, we'll think beyond computers and apply them to improve our personal productivity. Let's get into it. To explain what a work queue is, let me give you a non-technical example. Suppose that you are a high-powered executive named Alice, and your company has decided that you need an administrative assistant to handle writing emails, scheduling calendar events, and other administrative tasks. They assign you an executive assistant named Bob. You and Bob set up a system for communicating what Bob needs to work on. As you're going about your day, when you run into something that Bob can work on, you go to a large whiteboard. At the top of it, you write, "Schedule a meeting with Carol," and then you go back to your desk and continue with your work. When something else comes up, you go back to the whiteboard and write, "Email Dan to follow up on his project." As you're working at your desk, all Bob has to do in order to figure out what he should do next is look at the top of the whiteboard and find the next thing he hasn't completed. While you're writing an important document, Bob will go ahead and schedule that meeting with Carol. Once he's done with that, he'll send that email to Dan. If at any point the whiteboard is empty when he tries to find a new task, he'll sit around twiddling his thumbs, not doing anything. What we've described here is the core of what a work queue implementation could look like. There would be a few differences, obviously. Instead of an executive named Alice, we have a process A. This could be an Android application, a Ruby on Rails web app, or what have you. The application hums along, serving content to the user, and then occasionally it sends out some work to another process. This is just like the way you would write on the whiteboard for Bob, but instead of a human person named Bob, we have a worker process that we'll call process B. Process B can handle stuff in the background as process A is interacting with the user. The whiteboard in our example essentially is the work queue itself. The idea is that process A can offload tasks to process B. Here's a real-world example. A lot of times when you sign up for an account on a website, you're interacting with some web application that they have running. When you register for an account, you enter a username, a password, and your email address, and hit a button that says Create Account. One of the things that has to happen when you sign up for an account is they have to confirm that that's actually your real email address by sending you a confirmation email. One way they could do that is to have the application that is handling the signup form just go ahead and send the email. The problem with doing that is that sending emails can take a while. If the web application itself sends the email, it's not going to be able to send content to your screen while it's doing that. So you'll be sitting there wondering, why is this page taking so long to load? Which is not a great experience for the user. If we take a step back and think about it, there's nothing essential about sending that email right then as the page loaded. We can really offload that to some other process. To improve the user experience, we can use a work queue. Rather than sending that confirmation email during the page rendering process, we could put a piece of work in the queue to send that email. Of course, we'll keep the essential application logic of creating a user in the database, but that happens pretty quickly, especially compared with the time it takes to send an email. How would we implement such a system? Well, a common way is to have our main process produce messages to some sort of message queue. There's lots of options here, but two common choices I've personally used are RabbitMQ and Apache Kafka. Then, in our main process, we'll produce messages to that system. The only thing we're missing now is what we've called process B, or our worker node. For this, we create a process that reads messages off the queue and does work based on those messages. As an aside, if you're using Python, definitely check out Celery on its website, celeryproject.org. So why do I love work queues so much? The first reason is that they give us a chance to decouple things. Because we're creating an interface wherein process A just has to say, "Hey, I would like this thing to happen." That same process doesn't have to know anything about the other process. Let's say process A is a Python application. We probably start off with workers written in Python too. If we're smart about using language-agnostic serialization, we give ourselves more flexibility in the future. If we need some library that's only available in Java or have some task that's really best suited to Haskell, we can create worker processes in those languages. This gives us a lot of flexibility to choose the right tool for the job. The other nice thing about using a work queue is that it can make scaling much easier. While we've been calling it Process B, it doesn't have to be a single process or even a single server. Say one day a ton of people start signing up for our website. Our work queue starts getting longer and longer as Process B isn't able to keep up with all the work it needs to do. An easy way to handle this issue is to start up 10 more instances of Process B. One nifty thing we can do is dynamically scale the number of workers we have based on how many things are still in the queue. If our workers start to fall behind, spin up a few more instances. If the queue is frequently empty, spin a few down. Let's talk about when to implement a work queue. The key insight to note is, when we find a piece of work that is easily parallelizable, that's a good candidate for this kind of system. In other words, if we encounter a problem where we can break apart a large task into a number of similar subtasks, we could likely put those tasks into a queue. For example, we might want to scrape a bunch of web pages. To do this, we could create a message that includes the URL of the page we want to scrape and says, "Hey, scrape this thing." Then we have one process spit URLs into the queue and a number of processes reading from that queue, scraping pages and storing results in a database. Beyond being a nifty technical tool, I've been able to find applications for this in my working life. That example at the beginning, where Alice was farming out work to Bob, is actually pretty similar to how I operate day in and day out. Except, instead of farming out work to an administrative assistant, I'm farming out work to future me. Basically, when I encounter something that is a little chunk of work that I know I can do later and that is going to knock me off task right now, I write it down in a list. I set a specific time each day to go look at the list and knock out all the things I need to do. This technique has helped me be more productive because batching little tasks like this all together means that during the course of my day, I make fewer costly context switches between deep analytical tasks and more administrative tasks. Further, I have found that the amount of context in those analytical tasks is usually much greater than the context for an administrative task. This means that if we group the administrative tasks together, switching between them may still result in the same number of context switches, but they are each less costly. I will forever be grateful to the people I worked with during that summer 4 years ago. Getting exposure to common patterns and concepts has been immensely helpful in my work as a software engineer, and I hope that hearing about this idea will help you solve a problem someday. Thank you for listening. Let me know what you thought about today's show by tweeting me. I'm at SamuelDataT. Or email me your thoughts. My address is podcast@samueltaylor.org. The music in this episode is by Gillicuddy. Find his work at gillicuddy.com. That's GILLICUDDY.com. I hope you make an excellent day for yourself.